The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly from The Guardian. Coming up in this week's show...
Going from playing in little clubs to all of a sudden experiencing touring in arenas and playing at the O2 and Glastonbury main stage. And I mean, it was kind of mind-blowing for us. It was just such a huge contrast from what we were used to.
Little Dragon's Yukimi Nagano on Playing with Gorillaz and following up that difficult second album. And we hear new music from Zombie, Little Roy and Washed Out, plus your comments from the blog. That's all on this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello and welcome to the programme. A flurry of excitement at Guardian Towers, not because a new pret-a-manger has opened up two doors down from our offices, although that is obviously the talk of the newsroom at the moment, but because our favourites, two of our favourite contributors, Jude Rogers and Rob Fitzpatrick, are with me in the studio today. Thanks for coming in. Hello, Jude.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank
Excellent.
You.
How are you, Rob?
I'm very good, Alexis. How are you?
I'm exactly the same as I was when Jude
Excellent.
Asked me that question.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah,
it'd be bad if we were all feeling poorly and then it would
terrible.
Apart,
yeah. Yeah, not really in the mood for doing this. How are you doing?
I don't feel very talkative today. Yeah. Sad face.
Also, well, coming up later in the programme, we have Yukimi Nagano, who's the lead singer with the Swedish band Little Dragon. Their new album is out next week. But before we go any further, an appeal to you listeners. Over the summer, we'll be thinking about our podcasts here at The Guardian, making sure that we're producing the best possible shows for you. We want you to get involved in this process too. So send us an email to musicweekly, all one word, at guardian.co.uk, and we'll be in touch. Not me personally.
Obviously. That would be weird.
That would be weird, yeah, wouldn't it? If I had to sit
knocking
there,
on your door.
Hello.
Hello, Alexis. It's Alexis. Let me in.
But somebody from The Guardian will be in touch in the next couple of weeks with a few simple questions to answer about the programme. Right, anyway, let's get today's programme started with some new music. A choice pick of three of our favourite tracks at the moment in Singles Club. First up is Jude's choice. Zombie and Haunted from his new album. Jude, you brought that in.
I did.
Explain yourself.
I will explain myself. Rob is making me laugh across the room. It's hilarious.
I've literally done nothing.
We're just grinning. We're having such a lovely time already. This is Zombie. Now, Zombie is a very mysterious character. Mm-hmm. He's from the Midlands. He won't show his face. He's kind of like a burial goes beyond.
Right.
He is notorious for not showing up at gigs. He didn't show up at ATP earlier this year.
Is it Pete Doherty?
It is not. He's the Pete Doherty of sort of grime stroke,
Birmingham,
dubstep stroke, two-step, garage, whatever.
Brilliant.
He first released a record in 2008 called Where Were You in 92, which was absolutely amazing.
It's a fascinating thing because I was thinking that you just played sounded like the breakdown from an old hardcore. It sounded
really
like any minute it was going to kick back
yeah,
in.
Yeah, the donker's going to come in.
Yeah.
Now, he is really fixated on that part of the early 90s. If you haven't heard Where Were You, letter U, in 92.
That's clever.
Just came up in 2008, I think. It's brilliant. It's just like somebody's tried to make a record that takes all the highlights of that scene. And where was I in 92? I was, you know, in my geography class listening to, I don't know, probably New Kids on the Block or something like that.
Yeah. I was raving.
You were, but I'm teeny. I'm not tiny at all. But anyway, he released some 12 inches, a couple of 12 inches, an EP and Hyperdub. And this is his new album, which is called Dedication, which is fantastic. It's just out. It is dedicated to his father, who died last year, who's died of cancer like 4 months, which is pretty awful. It didn't influence the tracks. He'd written this... put together the tracks already, but could have, he said in a really good cover interview in the Wire magazine, which is the only cover interview you've ever seen where you haven't got a picture of the person in the magazine.
Literally nailed to the shelf.
That he was curated with his father in mind. He releases loads of tracks on YouTube that aren't released formally.
Is this track representative of the rest of the album?
There's kind of two sort of moods in the record. There are the, you know, this kind of reminds me of a sort of late 90s like DJ Shadow Take and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
But there's lots of stuff that's quite 8-bit, frenetic, Really fantastic. He does stand out from other producers. He has a very strong kind of sound. It's a really complete record. He also has some people from Animal Collective singing on one track on the record. And Lady Gaga has been playing his albums between sets or something, apparently, according to the Wire magazine.
Amazing.
So there you
Amazing.
Go, lots of facts.
Did it tickle your fancy, Rob?
It did. You know, I'd like to. I was waiting for an enormous, great kick drum.
Does it do that?
A little bit more than but not really. That kind of it's a bit of a somber one. Okay. But some of the album does go off.
Because in 1992, I was listening to music a bit like that, and Red House Painters and Tortoise. That was basically all I listened to in 1992. I like that very
much. Sure, you listened to Tortoise in 1992.
Yes. Well, maybe 1993. Maybe
a,
I was... No,
a
you know, maybe,
tortoise.
I'll take
tortoise.
Listen,
let's cross not off, the tortoise.
I'll cross off...
Just a tortoise.
I'll cross off tortoise. I'll go for Scud Mountain Boys.
Okay. Well,
that might be it. So I was lucky that car. I liked the rave horn. There was some sort of element of rave
horn. There was a little
underneath.
Thing. I noticed
little
bit
of rave
horn in the background, yeah.
And there was that's a bit... It was getting a bit Derek May there.
Yes, it was, which is always a good thing.
And a bit of Ace then.
It's on 4AD, which is quite interesting.
Home of the rave.
Is it really?
It is, yeah.
Home of the rave.
4AD are doing a Warp record. You know, Warp kind of had that period in the late 90s, early 2000s, where they started taking on bands that, you know, weren't very techno, you know, broadcast. Yeah. A bit more expansive.
They've gone the other way.
Yeah?
They've gone the flip.
They have.
Yeah.
So you liked it, Rob?
I did like it. I would like to hear more. You know what? It's actually admittance time. It's been sat on my desk for ages, and I keep meaning to play it. Now I'm going to go home and play it.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. Interesting that 4AD have signed it. You can sort of see atmospheric kind of angle.
A lot of it is more intense than that. I kind of that's kind of like track 10 or something like that. Okay. It's my favourite off the album.
No, I thought it was beautiful. I thought the tune, the little piano motif, was very lovely. I would like to hear more of that kind of thing.
Okay.
Dear Zombie.
Dear Zombie.
Can I have some
Dear
more?
Jim, please can you fix it for me?
He might come out with like a bag on his head and deliver the whole thing.
Scare the kids.
Yeah.
Okay, well, three thumbs up for Zombie and Haunted from the new album. When's the album coming out? Do we know?
I think it's out. I think it's just out.
Okay, brilliant. Mm. Next up is Rob's choice.
She said, why don't you stop your crying? Go outside and ride your bike. That's what I did. I killed a toad.
Magic.
That is, it's like being on Magic FM, isn't it? that is Little Roy.
Yes.
Dive, the cover of the Nirvana classic, from his Battle for Seattle.
Battle for Seattle.
Who is Little Roy?
Little Roy is literally an old school Jamaican roots reggae artist who had made his first record in 1966, age 13, with Jackie Mitu.
Okay.
True story. And but he's sort of one of those characters that has sort of, that has kind of flitted in and out. He worked a lot with Dennis Brown. He worked a lot with Jackie Mitu, obviously, again. And he worked with Lee Perry and people like that. And he's made some classic albums. He had a sort of a thing called the Safari Movement in the mid-70s, where he made some classic sort of roots records then. There's something really, really good about this record. And it's the album's Battle for Seattle, and it's all Nirvana covers.
It's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
It fills me with
joy. you sort of think it shouldn't be as good as it is. And that is down to three things. Little Roy has got an amazing voice.
Mm-hmm. And a good name.
And a brilliant name. And he is literally little as well. Also, Prince Fatty, who's a Londoner, his production is just brilliant. You're all on analogue, all on sort of old, old instruments, analogue and all that kind of thing. Absolutely brilliant production. And also the songs themselves, weirdly, really lend themselves to the reggae format. Because the reggae cover version, it means everything has to be squashed into reggae shape.
Mm.
Yeah. And often it doesn't work. And often it's just trying to squash the melody over, chick, 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 chick.
They're quite simple melodies, I suppose.
But they're very simple melodies. Yeah. And also, I've got a word written down on here. That word is yearning. There's a yearning in Cobain's... I'm going to call him Cobain because he's not a mate. The main lyrics... which really suit reggae and really suit a voice like Little Roy's. And I think that across the whole record, and they're also, I've got the whole record here, and there's things like a Very Ape and Heart Shaped Box. There's not like Smells Like Teen Spirit or stuff like that. Some of them are more the sort of obscure end of the Nirvana thing. And they're just really beautifully done. I think they're really, it's got a very nice really lovely kind of feel to it.
I think it's interesting in that it keys into a sort of old-fashioned thing about reggae. Reggae used to be very kind of reactive music, and basically whatever was happening, particularly in England, you know, it seemed whatever was happening in England, it was sort of transformers. Back in Jamaica, they just sort of knock out a reggae version of it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a reggae version of White Shade of Pale, reggae version of Beatles, and da da da. And I kind of like that. I mean, is it, you know, I like the idea. I'm not sure if I. Does it sustain for a whole album? Again, I've not heard the album. Do you know?
I've only heard the two tracks.
Right. Well, I had it on in the car. I had it on in the car the other day. That's how many cars I am. And I loved it. Yeah,
you know what, so, I had on. I had a reggae album on in the car the other day.
Yeah,
Rasta Mouse.
Oh yeah,
Rasta. No, don't laugh. Don't laugh.
Big
right?
Ting.
It's actually
Big Ting's a Guan.
Big Ting's a Guan. I think it's called Making a Bad Ting Good.
Yeah,
which
is a great title.
Which is fantastic. Yeah. You know what? As pop reggae records go,
isn't it?
It's all right. It's
well,
really
see, but
quite good.
That's the other truth about reggae. If you do it right, you can do almost anything with it, and it makes it work.
Yeah,
you know, if you get the, and that's what I think that why this works. And you still think, oh, reggae covers of Nirvana. It sounds like literally the worst thing ever.
But
invented.
A couple of years ago, quite a few years ago now, there was those Radio Dread, that Radio Dread record, which kind of for a few tracks was quite fun.
I mean,
and then after a while,
Easy
kind of
Star
a bit.
All Stars, I believe, with the
Easy Star All Stars.
So there was
the
Dark Side of the Moon, Dub Side of the Moon,
Dub Side of the Moon,
well,
yes.
Which, but
Glastonbury
I don't think
Classic.
They worked. Quite no. As, they didn't work quite as well. And there was all that kind of dreadful sort of Dread Zeppelin and stuff, all that kind of thing.
But it felt like a gimmick.
I think the reason why this doesn't feel like a gimmick, you could easily listen to this and not even know they were Nirvana songs, apart from Come As You Are, probably, which is a bit too much of a giveaway in the title. But so it works. They work as songs. So they don't work. Okay. They're not just being squashed together
it's
for
not,
a reason.
Okay, fair enough. I will take your word for it. That's Little Roy, Dive. The album Battle for Seattle is out
September 5.
And you seem to have a 7-inch single.
On ARC.
On ARC Records. Is that some sort of dub plate special?
That's dub plate special.
See, I know the lingo, he says.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. I've got it on Slate. I'll rinse that later.
So I imagine you can pick that up now, can you? The 7-inch.
The 7-inch I think you can pick up now. Yeah.
Excellent. And that has Dive on one side, I believe, and Sliver.
Yes, it does.
Excellent, yeah. Excellent, yes, excellent. The final track today is My Selection. The Grimes remix of Washed Out's Eyes Be Closed, my choice for Singles Club this week. I like Washed Out. I like Grimes.
Put them together.
It's revealing
at
its finest.
It's a dynamite combination. It's amazing. I like them.
I first heard the Washed Out album, beautiful circumstance actually. I was driving back from Glastonbury overnight. I had to leave Glastonbury at like 1:30 in the morning. So I drove back through countryside around Glastonbury, and I was kind of not really paying attention to what I had on, and I'd start the Washed Out album on in the car stereo, and it was just playing over and over and over and over again, and it became the soundtrack to what is a rather lovely sort of deserted roads, the moon hanging low in the sky. It's that kind of a thing as well. It's got a slight feel as a lot. I suppose you could call it chill wave if you wanted to use a terrible term. But it's got that slight feeling of music that sort of you half heard on a radio in 1984, kind of, you know, or you recorded off a radio in 1984 and found the tape recently. Grimes, I know less about than Washed Out. Washed Out is one guy from somewhere in the south of America. Grimes, I know a little less about. I was introduced to her work on this very podcast by the departed Miss Rosie Swash. She brought one of her singles in to Singles Club, and I really liked it. And everything else I've heard by her since, I've really liked as well. I like the kind. I think what she's done with the track is really interesting in that she spends ages kind of elongating the sort of ambient nature of the surrounding stuff, and you think, oh, this is what this remix is going to be, and then about 4 minutes in actually kicks in with a song. It's quite a clever thing to do. And I just sort of thought it was a really interesting remix of a generally interesting record. I throw it open to the floor. Jude Rogers.
I didn't particularly like the original, to be honest. I thought it was a bit boring. And I want to know the differences between chillwave and shoegazing. Good old-fashioned
shoegazing. Shoegazing is more synthesized, isn't it?
But this just sounds to me like something from about 1991, the original did. Yeah. The remix is really great. And when it started at the beginning, I thought it sounded very... choral, yeah. like Benedictine monks have suddenly started to arrive,
yeah.
quite quietly. Yeah. And it reminded me of The Beloved a bit at the beginning, I must say.
Interesting.
I don't think everything sounds like the early 90s. People are saying it all sounds a bit like the 80s. No, it sounds like the early 90s. But we're now at that 20-year point.
Yes.
Yes, we are. Yeah.
People are covering Nirvana, yeah. and exactly. People want to be The Beloved again.
I thought about this morning. I thought a little analogy for this in light of the sort of NASA. NASA sort of won the battle against the Russians, but the Russians have won the war.
I've
been working this out on a bit of paper. and slow dive sort of lost the battle, but they've won the war. Because if you think, you know, things like this, and if you look at, you know, Lanterns on the Lake, you look at I Break Horses, you look at, there's lots and lots of, and M83 and people like that, there's loads of bands that basically, loads of bands, and you can quote me on that, there's loads of bands that take that sort of Thames Valley, early 90s Thames Valley scene, like, and that is their new psychedelia, that is their Sunset Strip, 1966.
Shoegazing was always...
What an amazing thing.
Yeah, at the time, so, you know, at the time it was like the worst band in the world. And actually, what's true, because what the truth comes out eventually, and actually they're one of the best bands in
Somebody should write a history of psychedelia, because I remember arguing this, my shoegazing revival piece of 2000 and whatever it was, six or seven, that it's basically psychedelia, it's not indie, it's psychedelia.
But also, you know, like Ringo Death Star, stuff like that as well. So you have like Slow Dive and Jesus and Mary Chain to an extent, and My Bloody Valentine, stuff like that. And, have now, they are the new Love and, you know, early Pink Floyd and things like that. And people have sort of left them behind. They've gone and they're just for old people now. And this is the new lot. There's my theory.
Amazing. You're listening to Music Weekly from The Guardian. This is brilliant. An intellectual theory about the Grimes remix.
Rob is very intellectual, as he said.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, look, we're hoping to get Washed Out to join us in the Music Weekly studio in the next few weeks.
They'll be racing in now. I bet they're probably in the car now, isn't
it? I imagine. Well, not after Jude, so she didn't like
that's true.
Record,
I won't be here, it's fine.
Turn back. Yeah, well, you know. It's ruined it for everybody. Look, we're going to move on. Now, as most of the posts on the blog this week are about the Mercury Prize, we're going to touch on those at the end of the programme. But here's a quick selection of comments about last week's reviews. Dave Portivo said, Queen Bee, by whom he means Beyonce, should release Countdown or 1+1 rather than the dire best thing I never had. I do love Run the World, though. Now Rose is gone, can I come on the pod? Yeah. To which Nick Passmore chipped in, I think you should definitely get Dave Portivo on the podcast as a guest. His comments are always informed and entertaining. Rosie, barely, you know.
And he's also my alter ego.
It's
two for the price of one.
Finally, for now, Mark Burrows said of Rebecca Nicholson's comparison, she was on the podcast last week, and she compared Joanna Newsom to mustard. Newsom is rather like mustard, capital M. She once did me in the library with a lead pipe.
Wow.
Indeed.
Turn that around and you've got a real problem on your hands, haven't you? Let's not go there.
Thank you for your comments and retweets this week. As ever, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and post comments on the Music Weekly blog. All the links, of course, are at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Next on Music Weekly, John Dennis talks to vocalist Yukimi Nagano of Little Dragon. You probably know them best from their collaboration with Gorillaz on the Plastic Beach album, but you might be about to get to know them a whole lot better, as they're just about to release a third album called Ritual Union, following an appearance at Glastonbury this year, and they have a collaboration with Big Boy. Hey!
Ooh.
Hey! They have a collaboration with Big Boy in the works too. Earlier this week, John spoke to Yukimi about how a Little Dragon track comes together.
We have three setups, so all the guys, you kind of produce and write, and usually they'll start with a beat or, you know, some chords or something, you know, some kind of loop. Usually there's some kind of vibe in it already, and I'll sit and I'll listen to that over and over for a couple hours, write something, record it, and sort of afterwards we'll be able to feel if it's something that we want to continue. And we just kind of keep writing ideas pretty spontaneously, so it's like we record as we come up with it, pretty much. You know, that's why it's...
Because you've known each other for years, haven't you? You were at school together.
Yeah, I mean, I met Eric, the drummer, when I was like 14. I met Fred, around that same age. Håkan, I met when I was like 17, 18,
But does that mean that you can pretty much say anything you like to them because you know each other so well that you can, you know, you kind of trust each other? You have a level of trust that you might not have if you'd just met in more recently.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially in the writing process, I think that it's the best feeling. I mean, obviously, sometimes it's you know, you might not always be on the same page about something. People will argue, will have different opinions about things, but I much rather be in that kind of situation than sort of work with someone that I don't really know. And, you know, especially creatively, you know, you might feel like, oh, I really don't like that part, but it's really hard to say. You don't want to step on anyone's toes. And in that sense, it's like, you know, we know each other. To a certain degree, sometimes they don't even have to say anything. I can almost guess what they're thinking. You know, it's kind of, we're that close. So,
well, that's interesting because you've been collaborating with a lot of other people right. over the last few years. I mean, tell us a bit about that. I mean, what was it like working, for instance, with Gorillaz?
It was amazing for many reasons. The whole kind of touring experience and meeting all the artists, all the other artists that were involved, and you know, going from playing in little clubs to all of a sudden experiencing touring in arenas and playing at the O2 and Glastonbury main stage. And I mean, it was kind of mind-blowing for us. It was just such a huge contrast from what we were used to. It's kind of like one of these things that we'll never ever forget.
Big Boy from Outkast, has that happened yet, that collaboration?
No, it hasn't happened yet, but we met at South by Southwest, and you know, we've been sending some tracks back and forth. And we've been very inspired by his music, so it was kind of like overwhelming to hear that he loved our music, and just feel like if the vibe is there, something will happen for sure. But
it's quite interesting that a lot of bands seem to come to fruition or suddenly produce something, you know, fantastic on their third album, don't they? I mean, you know, think of London Calling or Forever yeah. Changes or Parallel Lines. I mean, Guardian music writer Dorian Linsky was remarking on this on Twitter recently. I mean, how do you sort of see this album, Ritual Union, compared to the last two albums?
Well, I think with the first album, you're super vulnerable and scared. Everything's new. Second album, you want to do everything right. Third album, you're kind of like, this is who we are, and if people don't like it, at least we love it. And I think you've built up a kind of self-esteem at that point. Well, that's how it feels, at least for us. We're not as scared. You kind of get to the point where you know that, you know, you're not going to feel devastated if someone doesn't like it. It's kind of the way it is. You know, people have different tastes, and, you know, you don't take it as personally as you would have maybe in the beginning.
And you feel a bit more confident, I guess, about kind of, you know, carrying on. Because when you make your first album, you're kind of, I suppose it's part of it, in the back of your mind, you're wondering whether you'll get to make a second one, you know. But
right.
then, by the time you're in your third album, then you feel a lot more confident that you've got a career ahead of you.
Yeah, I mean, we just love writing. Like, even if we wouldn't have the labels and we wouldn't have the fans, we would be, you know, working our little side job, still making music in our studio, even if it wasn't for all those things. So.
You're from Gothenburg in Sweden. I mean, what's the music scene like in Gothenburg?
There's everything from like heavy metal. The Knife is originally from Gothenburg. Jose Gonzalez.
You've worked with Jose Gonzalez, haven't you? Tell us about that.
Me and Eric, we played some backup percussion and backup vocals with him on tour. So yeah, that was kind of like one of our best side jobs we've ever had.
Tell us about the sleeve of the album. I was slightly intrigued by the there's pictures of kind of sepia tinted photographs they look like married couples, wedding photographs. Is that what they are?
Yes, they're married couples, and they're basically our parents and our distant relatives.
Oh really? They're actually, which yeah. ones are your parents?
To the right, that's my dad and my mom.
So that's a really personal kind of artifact for everyone.
It's
in the band.
It's extremely personal, yeah.
And what have your parents said about it?
I think they're pretty proud, most of them.
Did you have to ask permission?
Yeah.
And how did that go?
Well, it's a little bit sensitive because actually all of our parents are divorced, and obviously these are marriage photos. But I think we thought that was kind of part of the irony as well. We haven't really heard from all the relatives yet what they think.
Yukimi Nagano of Little Dragon there talking to John Dennis. What do we make of Little Dragon?
I like the last album, but the single off, I think Ritual Union, the song is the single off the new album, which has been having a lot of radio play. Her voice is fantastic.
Yes.
Her voice is fantastic. They did a session last week on Lauren Laverne's show in Six, I believe. I think that's where it was. And she sounded amazing, absolutely amazing. There's so many bands like that, kind of electronic pop bands with a bit of a tune, but not that much of a tune. But kind of Ritual Union is fantastic. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to hearing the whole album because I haven't heard it yet.
Rob, I have to admit that I quite like them, but I sort of want to like them more than I actually do like them. You know what I mean? They're a really great package and a good concept, but it's nothing they've ever really done has ever really made their hair on the back of my neck. Literally my neck stand on end.
Okay, fair enough.
There we go.
Ritual Union, Trail by its remarkable single, is out on Monday. Okay, just before we go, we thought we could follow up on the many comments left on the blog about the Mercury nomination list, which we previewed last week and which is finally announced on Tuesday. We actually predicted quite a lot of the nominees. Ghost Poet, Tiny Temper, Anna Calvi, James Blake, KTB, PJ Harvey, Adele. I don't know if we didn't get King Chris Hurt and John Hopkins, Oversight, Everything, Gwilym Simcock. We didn't get him, obviously, either.
Don't be mean to the jazzer.
No.
I think the point one needs to make about the jazz nomination
for the Mercury is, however tokenist it seems, your average jazz album in Britain, new jazz album, sells less than 3,000 copies.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know what I mean? I imagine they will take any kind of tokenism they can get
I've got to say, I get quite, before I was a judge on the panel, I used to be, they've put this in to fill this hole, whatever. Mm. But what you do, you have about 250 records and you want to show 12 records that kind of sum up the range of those records. Mm. So generally there will be something that's jazz or classic because those are communities of music that are, they don't get talked about a great deal. And a lot of people who are kind of mainstream, indie electronic fans kind of just dismiss it a bit. And I think it's incredibly important for that world. And people get a bit kind of snarky about it. I've really got into a lot of jazz since doing the prize, actually, which I think is...
How many years have you done it for?
My sixth now.
Six.
Ouch. And now I'm like a dinosaur.
Is it not like being in Menudo? Do you not get kicked out at some point?
Yeah, okay. I will.
She's
do.
Heard enough. She's
I'm quite surprised I'm back this year.
Yeah.
But, they always try and get a kind of good section of ladies, but they might they should get a new model, a younger model.
They want to get like a 42-year-old bloke in there.
They do. They want to get like a white van driver.
Yeah.
And actually, he'd probably have picked Adele. probably put Adele and Tiny Temper in there. Where's the fucking Horrors album?
Ouch.
It's not on the list.
I know. Well, did they not enter it?
Do you know what? This is the kind of thing I have. I signed my confidentiality agreement, but I'm probably the most outspoken person.
You can't talk about
I can't talk about kind of the details of the judging or anything like that. Because, it's not fair on people. There's 12 of us in a room. All of us would have kind of probably quite different lists of the 12 that are there. Mm. My music tastes are a bit all over the place, as I'm sure readers of The Guardian and listeners to the podcast will know.
I couldn't believe Epic 45 didn't make it on.
Epic 45, band, Rob. I know. Yeah. There are a couple. I knew there would be a couple of albums that people would be up in arms about, of course, and I kind of understand why people get upset about that completely because, people get very passionate about bands. I actually quite like the fact that people are so passionate about these bands that they want to rant and rave about them. Mm. I think that's actually a very good and healthy thing about the music industry in Britain at the moment. It's great. I did hear the last week's podcast before kind of the announcement, and I was quite surprised you picked Ghost Poet because not a
fantastic record.
Yeah. Which I'd never heard of for the process. Yeah. And you have to remember this is not a list for the biggest music experts in the world. People have not heard of Ghost Poet.
No.
Most people have probably not heard of King Creosote, even though he's released lots of different records. Mm-hmm. People will argue that, maybe the price would be a bit more edgy, and I hate that word, and all these kind of things. And yet, maybe should have that's your opinion. I think those 12 records are really good. They're a really good representation of what's going on in music, and also what was submitted. I'm, personally delighted for, a couple of stuff. You think you've got the KTB record on there, which is a fantastic pop record, and you've got you know, the King Crimson and John Hopkins record, which is incredibly quiet and full of found sounds and weird, and you've got to really listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, those are two quite big extremes, actually. So I think it's a really good list this year.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why isn't there any rock or metal on it? Or why hasn't there never been any rock or metal in it?
There have been a little bit in the past.
It's better that heavy metal isn't included in the Mercury Prize, I think. Heavy metal is the only genre of music I can think of that maintains a kind of outsider cachet while selling millions, hundreds and hundreds of millions of records. It resists assimilation into a sort of middle-class, homogenous, broadsheet critic Mercury Music Prize world. It needs to resist that, I think. And, you know, I just don't think it would be good for metal for it to be included in the Mercury Prize, because, you know, if you want to have an outsider status, you've got to have something to react against. And what you need to react against is, you know, self-evidently, the Mercury Music Prize is biased against metal, because you're not telling me that it was the first one, 1992. There's not been one. Biffy Clyro is the one record.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
There's not been one record from that genre that wasn't as good as like the Dina Carroll second album.
Classic record.
I don't think.
I don't know over the history of the prize what rock records have been submitted. Maybe a lot of people don't submit stuff because they don't want them to be considered. Because, you know, the Gorillaz didn't submit their last record.
Yeah. And secondly, the other reason that I think it's good that it's not included is that I think if a metal band did get nominated, and if a metal band did win, the effect on their career would be totally detrimental. And it'd be detrimental in the same way that it's occasioned the Mercury Prize, through no fault of its own, has been detrimental to the careers of, you know, Ronnie Size or Dan, particularly to urban artists, because it tends to jump in too early and go, this record, which is quite good, is the best record of the year, but it's not. And if they'd left well enough alone, in 4 or 5 years' time, that artist might have made the best record of the year.
Yeah, but we don't know that. That's the thing.
Miss Dynamite,
for instance, is always brought up as the, you know, could have, you know, her debut album got in, where she now, she's been doing loads of stuff, you know, could have on the underground club scene for a long time, and she's probably happy.
But you see, I see your point, and it's a good point, but in a way, the sort of reverse argument, and I can't believe I'm not in any way going, God, why more metal? I don't mind whether there's any metal on it or not. But what I mean, but I just think it's an interesting question. Why is it not? Because it suggests that, exactly like you say, it's considered in a totally different way, in an outsider way, that jazz or classical or folk or jungle or grime or hip hop or anything, none of those things are outside our world.
Yeah.
But this is outside our world. But the other, but the flip side of keeping it outside is then it marginalises it even more. Than it might have been anyway.
Well,
and then people go, well, you don't need to know about that because it's just a bunch of long-haired idiots.
Next year, when I'm probably going to be replaced by somebody else, I think loads of metal bands should turn their CDs in. That's what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah. You're not allowed to answer this, Jude. What do you think is going to win? PJ Harvey's going to win.
There you go. PJ Harvey's going to win.
Katie B or PJ Harvey.
I think Bananarama are going to win.
I'd love Bananarama. Wouldn't that be amazing if Bananarama... something totally left field.
Yeah.
What do we? Is anything else in
the
chance?
That's the first time that Bananarama have been called left field, I think.
In the context of this, it'd be amazing.
Well, they are now. That's the shrinking of history for them. They are now left field. Bananarama now come from the outside.
Who are metal? I mean, King Creosote might.
That would
like
lovely.
King Creosote.
Yes,
it's a beautiful, beautiful record. Yep. Here were the comments from the blog. Zookatron predicted Metronomy, suggested Radiohead would be in there, and advised that Mount Kimby would be a much more worthy Northern Glory. Maybe.
Quite a nice record.
I like Mount Kimby. It's not the same thing as KEB, though, is it?
No, it's almost entirely different. Mm. In fact, it is entirely different.
On PJ Harvey, Nick Passmore, who we mentioned earlier, said of her, she's never stopped innovating, and the reason why Let England Shake has had such great reviews across the board is because it's so completely different to anything else that's been released this year. Very true. Mm. If I'm right in thinking the prize is supposed to go to someone that's come up with something rather unique, then she certainly deserves it, irrespective of the fact that she won in 2001. She doesn't need it, but why shouldn't we acknowledge that this is a very special album, quite.
Mm. People don't talk about her last album anymore, White Chalk. That was an amazing record.
No, well, it's been eclipsed, though, hasn't it, by this one?
I think White Chalk's an amazing record.
Just to show our listeners a varied bunch, White Eyed followed Nick's comment up with, if Polly Harvey gets it for the England Shake, it's a disgrace.
That was me.
Was that you? Yeah, Do you not like it?
No, you know, I don't. I don't think I've liked a Polly Harvey record in about 20 years.
That's
I quite like Sheena
the
Gig.
Right?
I quite like that one. That was it. She lost me after that. I know it still upsets her to this day.
She lies awake at night.
The letters I've had, Rob, dear Rob, from Devon. Dear Rob, please like this one. But don't do it for me at all.
We'll have more on the Mercury Prize a bit near results time in September. That's it, actually, for the podcast today. Thank you to Jude and Rob for coming in. Always a pleasure, my friends, never a chore.
Thank you for asking me.
Hey, I'll be asking you both back.
Do we get a goodie bag?
No. Oh. You get the gift of my undying gratitude. Or cash equivalent. 0p. Well.
Not much.
I'm Alexis Petridis. I'm back next week. And the programme was produced by Scott Cawley and Joe Wheeler. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.